the event the couple had a second child, then they were required to pay back all the money they had received in the form of the bonus and the monthly payments. If the child they had was sickly or mentally retarded or whatever, then they could petition for the right to have a second child, but only if they got permission could they have a second child without having to pay back what they had received. They had a bonus system in effect, and had it in effect by this time. Was in his third year. In 78, they paid 50 yuan per worker. In 79, 158 yuan. And they estimated that for the year of 1980, it would be somewhere between 180 and 200 yuan. They had had from 15 to 20 million yuan in additional profit each year as a result of these changes. To get back to family planning for a minute, Sharon wanted to know what happens if there are three children. And they said, in typical Chinese fashion, that since the policy had been put into effect, there were no couples with three children. The bonuses were not paid according to the basic wage, they said, but according to quality and performance. And this is noteworthy because there have been so many examples where bonus funds had been made available and they were simply divided up equally, defeating, of course, the purpose of the incentive plan. The Workers' Council decreed standards, and those standards determined the bonus distribution. The leaders, supervisors, and so on, got the average of the department. In the case of the manager, got the average of the plant. The cadres got a bonus 15% lower than the workers, whether the office or whatever. There were about 700 in the Workers' Congress, all elected, so that it would be a...
That's a high percentage of the total.
Right, that's one for every 15. They have the right to elect management and remove management. The director, as we met there in November of 1980, had not been elected, but he would be next year for a term of 3 years. But after the first 3 years of his service was satisfactory, then his term was indefinite until age 60, or health reasons could subject him to removal. The Congress, however, met only twice a year, and 20% of the number were cadres. But they elected a standing committee of 39, which met frequently, of course, and was really the power group. Now, in the Congress, 20% were cadres, but in the standing committee, 20 were workers, and 19 were cadres. when I asked why this big disproportion as between the numbers in the Congress, well, they elect the people who know the jobs, know the work the best. Which, since I came to Ann Arbor, getting involved in some discussions, I've read some studies of the Yugoslav delegations, and the same thing happens when they choose their executive committee or whatever it may be called. The proportion of those who are who hold the supervisory jobs is, even if not in the majority, a very sizable minority. And it's, I guess, understandable that if you're going to choose somebody to run your outfit, you're going to pick somebody who knows what's to be done. Anyway.
Good tour. Informative tour.
It was all very, very, very interesting.
Where do they get their cotton? Do you know that, for that particular time? Was it all Sichuan derived cotton?
I think it was a mix of imported cotton and Chinese cotton. Of course, at this time, China was our biggest customer for raw cotton. They, when I got back to Peking in December, I found that the cotton textile mill number one in Chengdu had learned their new ways very well, because they were on the carpet for misreporting their production and profits and underpaying their taxes. Also, while we were in Chengdu, we had a very interesting visit. Goshen College had 20 junior year students who had spent a semester at the Sichuan Teachers University, and we spent an evening with them and their director and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. Beachy. They were having a wonderful time. They'd all been pressed into duty, each separate one of the 20, as teachers of English, although most of them were not trained for that sort of thing. Their only complaint was how they were screened from the real intermixture with the Chinese. And although they had more than I think most, they still felt that they were hemmed in and not given a true mingling. Chongqing, that was an interesting visit. We went out to visit a commune, and to my surprise, the land of this commune was over a wide area, but many factories. In fact, in the building, the administration building we met, you could look out the window and see three factory buildings. And I asked, these were big factories, are these part of the commune? No, they weren't part of the commune. The land used to be. And there had been much of their land taken away for factory purposes. In fact, practically all the level land had been taken away from them over the 30 years. And the land they were left with was hillsides and so on. It was the deputy director we were meeting with. He said, yes, it was I said, were you compensated? No, it was confiscated. We had nothing to say about it. It was simply taken away from them. That is now going to be different. If this sort of thing happens, there will be compensation. I also asked, because I had learned in Peking from our military people that there was a great deal of dissatisfaction in the PLA with the agricultural reforms. And I said, do you have any knowledge of this? Oh, he said, very much so. He said there was considerable dissatisfaction, because as we changed our methods of payment to reward payments, quite often the PLA dependents are older or quite young, and so they got less. And he said, we have met the problem in this commune by giving PLA dependents the average of the unit to which they're attached. And he said, I've had a meeting with them, and they seem quite satisfied with that. Visiting in a commune near Wuhan, raising the same question, they gave them arbitrary work points to make up for the problem. And I didn't hear of any continuing dissatisfaction, so apparently these special steps they took did meet the problem, but there had been a problem.
Question on this confiscation of land. Did the commune get its secure employment for its members in the factories that were built on these sites?
some extent, yes, they didn't have preferred employment. I asked that question. But they themselves had had also gone into industrial activities, and they were then building a hotel, which would be, in effect, a Chinese tourist hotel. So yes, many of their people had gotten jobs. But they had gone into, they were in many more sideline so-called activities than the average commune, because they still had a lot left on their hands that they otherwise could not provide for. The trip down through the gorges was great. My advice to anybody else would be, however, to come up river rather than go down river, because the current is so strong and swift that you go through them so fast. And at that time of year, the first gorge, we got up at 5:30, but you go through it about 5:45, and it's dark except for you don't see very much except for the lights from the boat. But coming upriver, of course, you're going against the current, and the passage is much slower.
That's a good idea. The usual pattern is, of course, to go downstream, but I'll take that on. I mean, it's good advice.
I discovered that the new travel arrangements that they had in effect, which I've referred to before in connection with the visit of the marshals and others, I found also applied to ambassadors, because when I got to Chongqing, they said, no, we don't have any arrangements for you to take the boat. But this particular time, the week before, the boat trip was interrupted at Yichang because the river was closed, because there were the hydroelectric installation near Yichang was being put in, and the river was closed for transportation for several months until they opened the channel, which is now again open. And you'll have to make arrangements for the boat when you get to Yichang, beyond that. But they were quite sure that I could make it. And, will the people in Wuhan know we are coming? Well, they didn't know. Well, could CTS let them know we were coming? Well, we can't do that because we don't have the boat number. Well, I said, how many boats go from Yichang to Wuhan on the second stage now in the evening? They said, one. I said, well, what do they need the number? Oh, no, we can't let them know that you are arriving on a boat until we have the boat numbered. When I get to Yichang, there were also others on the boat who were from the embassy. They were going on by boat, but the director comes down and greets us at the boat. We have to go from Yichang to Wuhan by plane, because it's essential that we be there and be in Wuhan that night. I never did find out why we had to be in Wuhan that night. We were mad, of course, and so on, but there was nothing particularly done for that extra day in Wuhan. But it was absolutely essential that we be in Wuhan that night. Those who went took the boat. The remaining trip from Yichang to Wuhan, much of the time the banks have been built up for flood protection above the level of the river, so that there's not much to see in that in the rest of it. visited the iron and steelworks at Wuhan, which of course is one of China's biggest, and saw the very modern rolling mill installations, both hot mill and cold mill.
Did the first party secretary of Hubei province know you were in town?
Yes, and I had meetings with
Chengbeixian
municipal officials in Chengdu, municipal officials in Chongqing and in Wuhan, and also provincial officials in Chengdu and Wuhan. Talking also, raising the question in both Chengdu and Wuhan about the fact that we were proposing their cities as consular sites, and that we hoped we'd have no problem on housing and other arrangements. At the Iron and Steelworks, you know, these new modern installations were limping along at 30% of capacity. Not by this time they had mastered the technology, but the material flow from the heating units just wasn't able to keep up with this.
They were having pellet problems too. Weren't they of iron ore of suitable quality pellet?
Yes.
And then they had electric supply problem too.
Right. And the biggest problem still was the electric supply, which I would think is now, as they're coming on stream with the hydroelectric project near Yichang, that should be relieved. Then, on December 1st, we're in Wuhan. God, that hotel was cold. It was a raw.
Was this the same place where we stayed with Secretary Brown, or a different place?
I didn't go to Wuhan.
Oh, you didn't go. That's right. You stayed behind. This was out a guest house out by the lake.
No, this was not a guest house. This was a quite adequate hotel, but it was no heat, and it was really cold. And on December 1st, I had a meeting in my room with the director and two high officials of the Hubei Planning Commission. And they gave us a rundown on the economic problems and prospects of Hubei. And I was particularly inquiring about the floods that they had that spring. And those problems had all been handled. Yes, there had been a great disaster, but everything was in hand. It wasn't 3 weeks later, before Christmas, I know, in Peking, the representatives of the UN Development Program came to see me because they'd had teams in Hubei and other places. The political problems involved in China wanting flood relief, and the really devastating situation that they found, which was so at variance with what the top officials of the provincial planning committee had told me in Wuhan itself.
In early December, to get to again to our question of the change in economic development strategy and the emphasis on readjustment, had the slogan readjustment begun to be very evident in your conversations, if not in Sichuan, at least in Hubei?
No. No, I was quite disappointed in the session that we had. It's a flood of words, but it was more like the old style of 77-78. Then on December 7th, we had the Pan Am inaugural flight, which was a great day. They brought to Peking the Pan Am Board of Directors and their advisory committee. And dedication was handled to the Chinese by Gong Biao. Not yet Minister of Defense, I think, no. And the host, of course, was Shen Tu of CAAC. December 11th was an informal dinner. Han Xu and Ji Zhaoju came to the residence, and we had an informal dinner. Myself and Jay Taylor, Stape was, and his family were away. And for no particular purpose, just...
And when did Jay arrive?
Late summer, early fall.
Good man.
Yes,
very good man.
Excellent. And then the next day, another, in a much different way, remarkable dinner at the residence for Frank Gibney of the Encyclopedia Britannica and the Chinese editors of the Chinese edition of the encyclopedia. Very relaxed and very, quite freely spoken. It was, then I think I mentioned that we had shown some movies. We couldn't show them too widely because of the restrictions on them, but diplomatic community. There were two movies we also showed to the Chinese, Apocalypse Now, which I referred to before,
mm-hmm.
but also Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Han Xu was quite taken with that.
Can I come back to your Han Xu dinner with Ji Zhaoju? Do you remember, again, I just want to press, but I'm interested in when the readjustment really began to hit the everyone in Peking. Did that come up at this meeting? Did you begin to get a sense of an altered economic course?
I'd say about now.
Yes, it was certainly about that looking back, but no.
Didn't hit you?
No.
And this was your first meeting with Han and Ji after the election then, really, is that right? In an extensive way.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it couldn't have been. It wouldn't have been that long a span. Well, of course, I was gone
you
for 11 days. Possibly, yes.
Did the American political situation come up?
Oh, I'm sure. Yes.
By now, you really had just a totally easy, it's worth putting on the record what I know to be the case, that you just had a totally easy working relationship with the American desk people. And there was, I think, an extraordinary degree of mutual trust and confidence and candor on really all issues. You really on a single wavelength.
Yes, I think that's very true. And it was two-way.
Yes,
I mean
by that,
two-way,
because
right.
on their part, too.
Then Ray Marshall finally got in his visit from the 15th through the 18th of December, uneventful but pleasant. And the Christmas at the residence, of course, by this time it's getting a little sentimental for us, but it was typical on the 20th of December, which was a Saturday, we bring in a tree, a live tree in its pot from the courtyard into the foyer. And on the Saturday morning, had the tree trimming, all the children would come from all the American families, and had cookies and pop and milk and so on. And then this Christmas, for the first time, the various sections had office parties in there. Then on, as we had done before on Christmas Eve, we had the party at the residence. On this one, there were 434 adults, 67 children. It lasted 3 hours, started 4:30. And we would start with the, very soon in the preceding, children from the school would put on a Christmas pageant, which they had spent many weeks in training. And that was always a good start. And was warm events. The reason for 434 adults, we would invite all the Americans who were still in Peking at Christmas time.
When you're done, well, let me just interrupt on this. I let go too quickly that Art Hummel came by when on a visit. Was that his first trip to Peking after he'd become ambassador to Pakistan?
Yes.
Did he talk with you about his hopes of becoming ambassador to China?
Well, that was understood between us all the time because first time... Excuse me. I met Art Hummel before I went to China in 77. I may have mentioned this, that he asked to see me, and his first words to me were, "If it were not for you, I would be going to Peking." And of course, State was always a great admirer and close to Art Hummel, so that was...
No.
That was taken for granted. I got along very well with Art Hummel.
I think he's a first-rate person.
Yes, he is.
First-rate person, and if there were to be a career person, he would be at the top of the list.
Exactly.
He and Bill Weiss.
Right.
But I think in some ways Art has the seniority over Bill.
Right. Yes. Plus, Bill was so identified... some ways that with the new administration the fact that nothing was found for him, I think, is indicative of
yes.
the need to leave. Then on the Christmas Day itself, as I say, it was our practice to, the senior officers would look at what Americans were still left and make sure that nobody was left without a Christmas dinner to go to. This was our smallest Christmas dinner. We had 16 adults and two children. Included among the adults was Gil Robinson, who had arrived in China on the 21st, his purpose being to plead with the Chinese to make a payment to the China Exhibit Corporation because of their deficit. The emphasis on the 400,000, as I remember the figure, that was owed to the small creditors who had supplied services and other things in San Francisco, Chicago, New York, who had not been paid. And I met with him when he arrived, and I was unwilling to go with him to those meetings. Because after all, this was a private affair, and he understood that. He didn't press it. And we invited him to come to dinner. He was called in at late in the afternoon by Boy Bull for a meeting, so that he joined us late for dinner, and it was almost a year later the Chinese finally made a payment, but without telling him. He now is the number two man, of course, in ICA. He learned about it in some indirect fashion. Steve Solars came with a Codel late in the month, there for only 2 days. Met with Zhang Wenjin and Vice Premier Wan Li.
Knowing that he was going to become probably chairman of the East Asian Subcommittee.
Yes, yeah.
Taking Lester Wolf's place.
Right. That was more or less taken for granted. December 30th, the annual New Year's reception by the foreign minister for the diplomatic community. That was always done, not on New Year's Eve itself, but usually the day or two before. Then Ted Stevens and Anna Chenault came. CPIFA and Hao Deqing were their hosts. attended the welcoming banquet that was given for them. Obviously didn't go to their meetings. But after the banquet, they came to the residence at their suggestion for a meeting with me. It was in that session that Mrs. Chenault went out of her way to say to me, as you know, I came from Taiwan to come here.